Hey everyone, Dr. Miles here, and today's video is about general food guidelines for nearly all conditions, and here we're focusing on foods to maximize, foods to eat more of. So we don't want to just talk about what to not eat, we want to have you clear on what to eat. And it is absolutely possible to get a bunch of amazing and healing nutrients from food. And we want to choose nutrient-dense foods and foods that help reduce inflammation and foods that help nourish and strengthen the body. So these foods are going to be things that are going to be helpful in most cases, but we say nearly all conditions because there are certain conditions where some of these things can exacerbate them. So SIBO, small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, for example, is one condition that's fairly common. 10-15% of the population may have some level of small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, and that could mean that certain fibers and prebiotics and probiotics, things that are going to be mentioned here, may be exacerbating and causing extra gas and bloating and constipation or diarrhea. So know that this is not universal, but that in general we're working towards these types of things for most people, and that there may be a sequencing of events where we might want to eliminate a gut infection before introducing some of these things. So that's just an aside and a caveat. So the first category are things that we want to thank Dr. Terry Wall for helping to establish. She's a brilliant doctor who is able to put into remission and reverse her multiple sclerosis using diet. And so she's put together an amazing strategy for nutrition that is fantastic, not only for autoimmune conditions, but generally for getting and maximizing nutrient density. So there are these three categories that we want to have you maximize. And these are bright and colorful fruits and vegetables, sulfur-rich vegetables and leafy greens. So the first, bright and colorful fruits and vegetables. If you could get 2 to 4 cups per day, now that's before cooking, so they can cook down a little bit if you're going to cook some of them. You might eat some of them raw, especially the fruits. Then that's something that, you know, it's a little less scary because 2 to 4 cups can seem like a lot, but and it is a lot, but it's not too crazy if you're cooking some. So these bright and colorful things are things like berries, carrots, beets, pomegranates, bell peppers, cranberries. These are some of the bright, colorful foods. Think rich and vibrant colors. And these foods have a variety of nutrients and phytonutrients that are very healthy and very important for a lot of functions that we're just starting to learn about. We know blueberries and have seen them with research on the brain and neurological conditions and memory improvement. And we've seen pomegranate have research on cardiovascular illness and be just one of the most amazing cardiovascular tonics out there that can really help reduce some thickness of the arterial walls and help improve blood flow and things like that. And so a variety of these things, we do see some great research supporting things that they can do. So if you just get a variety of these colorful fruits and vegetables, that can go a long way. So we recommend 2 to 4 cups daily. And then 2 to 4 cups of sulfur-rich vegetables. And these are things that are a lot of the brassica family or cruciferous vegetables. So things like broccoli and cauliflower and cabbage. And then some other things too, like onions and garlic and asparagus and mushrooms are sulfur-rich. So sulfur-rich foods, again, 2 to 4 cups a day of these can be really helpful. And we see a lot of people deficient in sulfur, and sulfur being really important for a variety of liver detoxification processes, for skin health, and a number of other things. So it's important to get enough sulfur. We also see that brassicas have a lot of, so things like broccoli and broccoli sprouts have a lot of potential for something called sulforaphane, which is an antioxidant, which is involved in liver detoxification and antioxidant, natural antioxidant, healthy antioxidant in the body. So The third category are leafy greens. And leafy greens, again, 2 to 4 cups a day before cooking. Leafy greens cook way down, so if you get some baby kale, chardon spinach mix or something like that, it cooks way, way down. So 2 to 4 cups is actually pretty easy to do. You might do some raw in salads as well. And these are things like kale, chard, collard greens, mustard greens, spinach, lettuces, spring mix, things like that. Great to get lots of leafy greens. You probably already knew that, but see if you can get in that 2 to 4 cup per day range. So now, between all three of those, bright, colorful fruits and veggies, sulfur-rich veggies, and leafy greens at each 2 to 4 cups a day, that's starting to get to be a lot. So be sure to have them with every meal, if possible, and be sure to cook some and have some raw in order to be able to have that amount and have some variety in them too, if possible. Then, organic whenever possible, of course, is a great choice to avoid pesticides, fungicides, herbicides, and reduce toxic burden. And this is especially true for the Dirty Dozen that the Environmental Working Group puts out. We'll talk more about that later. Also, it's important to choose grass-fed for meats and dairy, and that's because cows should be fed grass, and when they're fed grains, they become inflamed and sick and produce worse fats. So it's important that you choose grass-fed or pastured, which is the same deal, whenever possible, for meat and dairy products. Certain meats, like chicken, it's going to be very difficult to find, but a lot of beef and some of the ruminants, like beef and bison, are a little bit easier to find grass-fed. And then dairy for sure should be grass-fed, if possible, and if you tolerate dairy. Some people don't, so you have to assess for yourself whether you tolerate it. Then probiotic-rich foods, except, again, in certain conditions like SIBO, we might not want that, but fermented foods like sauerkraut and kimchi, or fermented beverages like kefir or kvass are some great ways for people to get probiotics in. And so having some probiotics in the diet, in addition to, even if you're taking a probiotic, to still have some in the diet can be really helpful. Prebiotic foods and fibers. Fiber is so important. A lot of people are deficient in it. Prebiotic foods are really important. These can be exacerbating, again, in cases like SIBO and gut infections. But if you can work towards increasing these, we love it if people are able to work towards around 50 grams of fiber per day. That's quite a bit. You don't need to count it, but to be able to have prebiotic-rich foods and fiber-rich foods, these are going to be things like green bananas, especially. You can use those for smoothies instead of regular bananas. The greener they are, the more resistant the starch. That means it resists digestion in the small intestine, makes it to the large intestine, and feeds healthy bacteria there. Green plantains, which can be cut up and dehydrated and made into chips, put a little coconut oil and salt on, really delicious. Snack food that's a good prebiotic. Potatoes that have been cooked and then cooled for 24 hours, the starch becomes resistant when they're cooled. So if you eat them like potato salad, or you bake potatoes but you eat them cold or at room temperature, that's going to be a great way to get some resistant starch as well. If that's hard or these other things are hard, you can also get unmodified potato starch by Bob's Red Mill and have 1 to 3 tablespoons of that per day, but work up slowly if you're just getting started, and that can help supplement resistant starch. Lentils and other beans are a great source of resistant starch and fibers, so those can, if tolerated, be an excellent way to get some of these in. And then things like onions, especially if they're a little bit crispy and not sort of cooked to complete softness, but a little bit of crunch, those can be helpful. And then for resistant starch, and then leeks and dandelion greens as well. So those are some ways to get some good prebiotics in. Then seaweeds can be really helpful, especially if they don't have too many preservatives or food dyes or colorings, things like that. Seaweed can be a really rich source of iodine and minerals, and many people are deficient in those, especially if people aren't using iodized salt, which we don't recommend iodized salt. We generally recommend sea salt, like Himalayan sea salt, for example. But then you do need to make sure that you're getting adequate iodine from other sources. So seaweed's a great way to do that. Kelp is the highest source of iodine, and seaweed salads tend to have a lot of kelp in them. And so that's a great way to get iodine, and you'll also get a bunch of other minerals. And organ meats, especially liver. Liver is amazingly nutrient dense. It's almost like nature's multivitamin. It's got a ton of B vitamins. It's got a ton of folate, which is a B vitamin, but people talk about it independently. It's got a lot of minerals in it. And now some people might say, ooh, liver, that's gross. Well, if you mix it in with other ground meat. So some places will make a mix of 85% ground beef with 15% a mix of liver and kidney. And that's a great way to be able to get liver in because you don't taste it too much and you can make burgers and meatballs and other things. Also, another way is if you have to mix it yourself, you can make meatloaf or pate. Those are some things that can help hide the flavor. And then you can try it. I mean, if you haven't tried it recently, try just good old-fashioned liver and onions. Do some liver with some onions and saute them, salt and pepper. It's somewhat of an acquired taste for some people, but it's pretty decent for a lot of people. So try it out and, you know, give it a shot and find a way that works best for you to get some liver in if you can. And that's such a nutrient-dense food and so underutilized. I mean, it used to be really prized. It used to be one of the most prized meats. And now it's inexpensive. It's not commonly eaten, so you can get it inexpensively. And so do consider that for nutrient density purposes. And then wild and sustainable seafood is fantastic because omega-3 is often deficient for Americans. So if you can get enough wild and sustainable seafood, so long as you don't have too many allergies. So if you're not allergic to shellfish can be great. Clams, oysters, shrimp, prawns, scallops, things like that are really rich mineral sources, good sources of selenium, good sources of B12 and iron. So for vegetarians who do some seafood like clams or oysters can get a lot of B12 and iron, things that are commonly deficient, and a lot of zinc that are commonly deficient in vegan and vegetarian diets. So for vegetarians who are willing and able to do that, that can be a great thing. And then wild salmon, herring, mackerel, sardines, halibut, these can all be great choices. Sardines, sometimes people are scared of them at first, but they're worth giving a try if you haven't tried them in a little while. And they're easy, they're in a can, they're pretty low on the food chain, so they're low in heavy metals and mercury, and they're pretty high in protein and omega-3 fats, so give those a try. They're easy to have on hand, and see if you can do between a pound and a half to 2 pounds per week of fatty, cold water fatty fish, if possible, to maximize omega-3. And if you're not doing that much, be sure to talk to us and be sure to make sure that we're able to measure your omega-3 levels and to get you on a good fish oil and or talk to you about ways to maximize your fish intake. So those are the main recommendations that are just sort of general. We want almost everyone to be able to do these things. This is part of what makes a generally nutrient-dense diet and takes care of some of the nutrients and things that a lot of times people are deficient in, and helps feed the healthy gut bacteria and considers the microbiome and looks at some of the cofactors involved in physiologic processes that help to mitigate some common diseases. So this is going to be some good general guidelines for you. And again, remember, it's always personalized and we always have to pay attention to our own body's responses to food and then also look at other conditions and things that are going on and factor those in. So do be in communication with us about things that you're trying, and we'd love to be your partner and collaborator in finding nutrition that's optimal for you. Thanks for watching.